Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the State House Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of February 12th, 2020. This week, we recap actual results and what they mean for South Carolina. We're talking, of course, about the New Hampshire primary that has Senator Bernie Sanders leading the pack with Mayor Pete Buttigieg closely on his heels. But what does this mean for South Carolina and its poll leader, Joe Biden, and others who are still in the race as they compete in the First in the South primary, which features a dramatically different electorate? Reporters Meg Kennard and Jamie Lovegrove are here to help break it down. Interact with us on Twitter or Instagram at SCLeadPod. We always want to hear from you, so holler at us with your thoughts on social media. Like, oh, why is the podcast so late? I don't know, because we were waiting on results, guys. I can't control the entire news cycle, just parts of it. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. And if you like what you hear, make sure you review us on iTunes, and also subscribe to us so you can hear us every week. We're also everywhere you can find podcasts, including NPR One. Now you can listen to all four sections of our podcast while you think about Governor Henry McMaster and his wife Peggy at the KISS concert in Columbia. Mac would have loved that. Or while you wonder how slot machines make more money than baseball, movies, and theme parks combined. Talk about underreported stories. Jeez. Now for our brief quorum call. Big money, big money, big money. Oh. Two cherries. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here in the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number one, the Post and Courier reports that state senators have added more scholarship money for South Carolina's future teachers, higher stipends for classroom supplies, and letting school districts decide when classes start are among the changes to the 60-plus page education bill still being debated in the state Senate. Now, if and when the Senate passes its version of this bill, which is S-419, it heads over to the House, where it will work through the committee process over there. We don't know how long that process is going to take, but again, education is a priority this year. Number two, the Post and Courier reports, boondoggle update. Now you got Andy Brown, you got Avery over there, you got Thad. I mean, this is boondoggle on all cylinders right here. Post and Courier reports that Next Era Energy has submitted a multi-billion dollar offer for Santee Cooper that could pay off the state-owned utility's massive debts and refund its electric customers the money they already paid for the failed VC Summer nuclear project. Now, NextEra would need to cover $5.3 billion in additional costs in order to privatize the utility. Virginia-based Dominion Energy entered an offer to take over Santee Cooper's management, but leave the utility under state ownership. And Santee Cooper submitted its own bid that features lower electric rates than NextEra offered over the next 20 years, but doesn't resolve the VC Summer lawsuit that is headed for trial. Number three, to quote Governor Henry McMaster, you know how to spell port? M-O-N-E-Y. South Carolina set an export record for the 10th year, selling $41.5 billion in products last year, with a little less than half of that going through South Carolina's ports. This according to the Charleston Regional Business Journal. China, Germany, Canada, and the United Arab Emirates may be the state's top export markets. Now, the top exports from South Carolina include aircraft, vehicles and parts, rubber, and plastics. And now for our Florida Man News segment. Every week we give you a headline, a little taste of the most captivating Florida Man news. And you know what? This time we did a little feel good. This one's from the Today Show online. This is gonna make you feel good, guys. This 107-year-old Florida man still drives his Mercedes. All right.
Gavin, I can confirm that is incredibly weak content.
No, well, I never want to feel good.
It's incredibly weak.
Well,
do better.
If that's how you feel, I do have something.
Come on, do better.
Here's one. Headline, Florida man calls cops after being shot at by a man he stabbed.
That is strong Florida content.
Man, it's like calling the cops when you get robbed of your marijuana. I've been told. And just like the Lady Gamecocks defeating the University of Connecticut for the first time ever, we buried the lead. Did you record that?
Yeah.
We have results, folks, and people don't know what to do with themselves. Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders won New Hampshire with 25% of the vote. Former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg came in a strong second with 24%. Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar surged into third with 20% over Elizabeth Warren, the senator from nearby Massachusetts, in fourth with 9%. And former Vice President Joe Biden finished fifth in New Hampshire with 8%. That night, we also saw Andrew Yang and Colorado Senator Michael Bennett drop out. And by the time this podcast drops, former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick will likely have as well. And just a little refresh on the Iowa results, which the AP still hasn't called. We saw Buttigieg besting Sanders by 0.1%, folks, and then Warren and then Biden. So just a little idea there from Iowa since we haven't really had a chance to talk about it. I'm sure that clears it up right there. So now that we got the white bread early voting states out of the way and the contest is shifting to states like Nevada and South Carolina and onward to Super Tuesday and then Washington! Sorry. We're a little ramped up here, aka the states that are more representative of the Democratic Party, which means black and brown voters. Now, Joe Biden shook things up here by showing up at a South Carolina launch party Tuesday night while New Hampshire results were still being counted. He left New Hampshire the exact same way he treated New Hampshire, showing up late, not paying for much, and leaving early because he's got South Carolina on his mind. So join me to discuss New Hampshire results and what they mean for South Carolina are South Carolina-based reporters Meg Kennard with the Associated Press and Jamie Lovegrove with the Post and Courier. Hey, guys.
Hello.
To quote Senator Amy Klobuchar, hello, America.
Hello,
I'm assuming
America.
You guys are listening to this podcast. Hey,
yes.
Jamie.
Hello, America. How's it going?
Sorry, we're a little ramped up there. We had a little bit of a late night there.
It's only 8 in the morning. After a very, very late night. We are well rested and ready to ride.
Well, things are kicking up, like I'm saying, especially with that surprise announcement with Biden coming to Columbia yesterday while the results were still being counted. Meg, how was that cutting bait tactic received in South Carolina? And what is the campaign hoping to get out of that? What was it like last night, too?
There was a lot of great energy in the room last night. I talked to a bunch of voters who said that they were really diehard Joe fans. And one woman told me that she had been in Myrtle Beach all day for work, but she made sure to come back and come out and support the former vice president and be excited for his campaign. Of course, the people who were at that event last night were probably more likely to be the most, you know, original, dyed-in-the-wool Joe Biden supporters. But it was a huge show of force for him to not only leave a state where votes were literally still being counted, not that it really would have changed the result if he decided to stick around for his victory party, but to come here to South Carolina to address those voters by live stream before he took the stage last night. That showed South Carolina that he's serious, which, let's be honest, is something that Joe Biden really does need to do. Mm-hmm. His finishes in the first two states were expected to be kind of where they are. Not all that great. But last night, his messaging was very, very clear. I'm serious about South Carolina. I'm ready to come down here. And the results of this state, he said, that's really going to be where we see the real election happening in the more diverse states.
Jamie, it was a bit of a pivot last night for Biden. And then also, you know, there's two stories people are kind of thinking about what might be happening now. Him pivoting, and getting this momentum going or the beginning of the end. And I'm wondering, when are we going to know what the narrative is for Joe Biden and what did you see coming up from last night's event?
Look, obviously, this is not what you want as a candidate. This is he is not going to have momentum by any means coming into any of these states. And obviously, the difficulty that he faces is that he was the front runner in this race. He was the favorite in this race. And so the expectations for him were high. By contrast, you see Amy Klobuchar coming in third, and it's like she just won. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes where you meet expectations is actually more important than necessarily where you place. Same thing, Bernie Sanders. Sanders just won New Hampshire, and yet a lot of people are talking less about that because of the fact that he won it so easily 4 years ago, which does remind me to mention, you know, I mentioned this yesterday while voting was ongoing in New Hampshire. The last two Democratic primary contests, the eventual nominees both lost New Hampshire by a combined 26 points, and they both won South Carolina by a combined 76 points.
That's a lot of math, Jamie. It's really early.
It is important to note that in recent history, South Carolina has had a much, much better predictive record of who will be the nominee than New Hampshire has. And I think that the reason why that is quite obvious. New Hampshire is reflective of a much smaller region of the country than South Carolina is. New Hampshire, demographically and in terms of voting patterns, is reflective of sort of the the small states that surround it, Vermont, Maine, maybe Massachusetts, but that's kind of its own animal. South Carolina's demographics and its voting history tend to be reflective of the entire Deep South. And that's a lot of delegates, which, again, is all that matters at the end of the day, who can reach the amount of delegates needed to become the nominee. And so the reason why, you know, South Carolina matters so much is because of what it's going to say about what's going to happen in North Carolina, what's going to happen in Georgia, what's going to happen in Tennessee, in Louisiana, in Mississippi, in Alabama. And so this is still going to get a lot of attention. And certainly the message from the Biden camp last night was that this race is far from over. And I think, frankly, even Bernie Sanders, who is in commanding position right now, would agree with that. He is not by any means going to take his foot off the gas pedal here.
Right.
And I just want to remind everyone who is, you know, blasting Biden about this move to come down here from New Hampshire. Let's go back to 2016 when Bernie Sanders, like a couple of hours into primary day, was like, all right, see you later, South Carolina. Onward to Super Tuesday.
That's, I mean, right.
Like, that's, yeah. It's just, you know, this is what it is. They focus on, they go where they need to go. And then, you know, we're already seeing Bernie Sanders, you know, investing in Super Tuesday states like North Carolina.
Sure.
He's going to have a rally there this week.
Happens really quickly thereafter.
I mean, and Meg, at this point, it really is, you know, expanding your ground game. And that's why I'm kind of confused. I'm probably jumping through my notes a little bit. But, you know, you see these people talking about, like, you know, Amy Klobuchar getting this surge. It's like, okay, great, she's surging. But we haven't seen her since MLK Day here.
That's right.
And then before that, we hadn't seen it. It was, like, very sporadic. You know, everyone's getting all hyped up. But, you know, when you get outside these Iowa and New Hampshire bubbles, you know, that's where everyone was invested, and it's now all of a sudden, oh, right, there's other states. There's South Carolina.
And there's a whole bunch of them, and a whole bunch that come very, very quickly. Let's not forget, they're just days between Super Tuesday and South Carolina's balloting. And so it's very smart for these campaigns to not only just be expanding that footprint now, but to be building upon a system that hopefully by now they've already had well set up in those places. Mm-hmm. You're right, we're seeing Bernie Sanders spend at least two events in North Carolina later this week. Yeah. There's been something, I think he added on another event in Texas later on that day. So he's been present in all of these places for months now. And so now he's going back to remind them, okay, hey, I'm definitely obviously very interested in you all, more so than just coming here to raise some money or whatever. You're getting ready to vote too. And so let's get that energy back ramped up. But some of the campaigns that haven't really had the opportunity or maybe the money to do that as much so far, yes, they all understand that those places are very, very important, but to not really have that ground game, that organization set up by this point, that could be a big struggle because there are a whole lot of those states that come up and they're very, very rich in delegates.
And Jamie, just along that, I mean, like we're talking about Klobuchar, I mean, you think Pete Buttigieg has a problem connecting with black voters? I mean,
Well, you know,
non-existent
and
for
and
her.
Folks, and, you know, Bakari Sellers was talking about this on CNN yesterday. You know, I mean, it is interesting that one candidate, Pete Buttigieg, has taken so many hits for trying and failing to connect with black voters. Amy Klobuchar has largely gotten a pass because she hasn't tried. I don't even remember the last time she was here.
MLK Day.
MLK Day. Well, you know, but by herself, like, you know,
I can't recall.
I mean, it's been a very long time. You know, and look, she did have limited resources, right? She had nowhere near the kind of campaign funds that a Bernie Sanders had or that a Pete Buttigieg had. That presents some limitations, but yeah, I think, you know, the piece of consolation that you would have as a Joe Biden would be the folks who are doing well in New Hampshire are not the types of people who are in a position to springboard themselves into a strong finish in South Carolina. If, you know, and this is quite the opposite of what happened, but if Tom Steyer had done well in New Hampshire, which he didn't, he was behind Biden, then you might say, oh, goodness, like, is he going to be able to use that to launch himself here? But, you know, the folks who did well there are going to struggle here. Now, you know, Buttigieg, his campaign has been saying for a couple months now that their path in South Carolina was that they had to do well in Iowa and do well in New Hampshire and that they were going to prove their viability to black voters by doing that. You know, the question is, and we've, of course, been skeptical of this for many months, do they care about what happens in Iowa and New Hampshire? Certainly everyone I was talking to at the Biden party last night said absolutely not. They said people don't watch cable news. They don't follow Twitter. They don't really care about what happens, you know, in white states. And so that's going to be a difficult message to send. But that's clearly, you know, what they are planning to do.
Yeah, I can't even tell you how many voters I've talked to by this point who say that's great, whatever they did in those other states. But here we are in South Carolina where it's very, very different. and we're just going to do whatever we're going
to
do.
And, to Pete Buttigieg's credit, like, you know, we did see him making inroads in the past couple of weeks trying to, you know, reach out, having some voter events. And again, we should also mention that, you know, Klobuchar and Warren were tied up with impeachment. So they, you know, we don't know what they could have been doing during that time, but, you know, they were also.
And Warren did have plenty of surrogates in the state and continues to.
Yes, absolutely.
But again, like that foundation, like, you know, at least Pete can point to some of these connections at this point and try and build off of it like these candidates need to start doing in the South. But when we look at some things, and Meg, I'm going to switch to you looking at several of the stories you had this past week, one of which was the cracks in Joe Biden's firewall. Mm-hmm. And we start talking about Tom Steyer. What's going on? Are there cracks in there? And are we seeing Tom Steyer kind of start wiggling through and making some inroads?
He's certainly trying to make those inroads. And this is something that I've heard from strategists and voters, too. And, no offense to strategists, but it's the voters that we really want to hear from at this point. But Joe Biden came into this contest, obviously, as the most well-known, as the most recognizable because of a variety of reasons that we don't need to rehash here. But as always happens with someone who comes into a contest like this as the presumptive front runner, and in many polls as the front runner there for a long time, you can go nowhere but down. And so as other candidates become better known, Tom Steyer is a great example because he has invested monetarily and otherwise so heavily in South Carolina because he's realized that it is among the black voters in particular that you've got to make those inroads, that you've got to develop those relationships. He's been doing that, and he's been doing it well, and he continues to pick up support. So he's one example. Bernie Sanders is another example of someone who he came into it with probably the second highest name recognition to Joe Biden because of his previous campaign and also his continued efforts to maintain visibility in places like South Carolina. So both of those candidates, I think, together have the opportunity to cleave away from Joe Biden some of that support. I don't necessarily, and I know both of them are playing to win, I don't necessarily think that means that they win the South Carolina primary, but even a very strong second or third finish here, depending on how the numbers lie, could do a lot for someone else's campaign, even if Joe Biden wins it in the end.
Yeah, and on the other side of that, Jamie, does a lot for someone else's campaign, but what does that do to Joe Biden's campaign and his future out of South Carolina when you have someone like Tom Steyer chewing into his momentum when Joe Biden really needs a big win in South Carolina? And, you know, now I think all of a sudden people are going to start realizing, oh, my God, what's going on with Tom Steyer in South Carolina, when they start putting this focus here and see that he's in second and third and he's making moves in these polls?
I think the absolute floor for Joe Biden is that he has to win. And they've been saying that for a while. You know, I was pointing out to folks yesterday, yes, it is even more important now for him because of the difficulties in Iowa, New Hampshire. But well before Iowa, New Hampshire, his campaign was calling South Carolina a must win.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can interpret the words must win in any other way than if we don't win here, it's not going to happen.
Really plain.
He has to win. Yes, I think it's going to be very difficult for him to do well anywhere else unless he wins commandingly and sends a resounding message to the rest of the field. And the Steyer candidacy has complicated that a great deal. And Steyer may well be reflective of what's going to happen when Bloomberg suddenly becomes a factor in the race after South Carolina, when we head into Super Tuesday. Now, Bloomberg's obviously not on the ballot in South Carolina, which it's fascinating how many South Carolina voters do not realize that because
they're disappointed.
He's advertising in the Charlotte market. Yeah. He's advertising in Savannah. That crosses over. And so people, you know, I run into people all the time. I was like, I'm thinking about Mike Bloomberg. I'm like, well, I'm sorry to tell you, you're not going to be.
Yeah, so Steyer's the anyway, warm-up back for Super Tuesday
Bloomberg.
He is. That's right.
So the point is that both of them have been cutting into Biden's lead among black voters. Mm-hmm. And what that's done in South Carolina is it really has created at least a three-way race. Obviously, Warren is a little further behind, but she's still in the mix. Mm-hmm. And Buttigieg is obviously hoping to kind of join the mix as well. But at the very least, Biden, Steyer, and Sanders are seriously in the hunt at this point. And as we say, Bernie has a lot of momentum now. He has a ton of name ID coming into this race. He
also
is very well
known. Plenty of
money. Plenty and plenty of money.
Just wait to see how much he raises just from this win alone.
Exactly. Deploy more here. And he has a very extensive organization in South Carolina. A lot of folks going out and knocking on doors all day, every day. It is crazy in some ways to think, right, that this person who lost by 40 to 50% in 2016 could win. But as we've actually been noting for a long time, because of how divided this race is, he could get the exact same percentage he did in 2016, yeah. which and, was 26% right. and right. win.
Yeah.
26% could easily be enough to win in South Carolina. And, that's,
and you mentioned a resounding win, and we're wondering for Biden, like, what would a resounding win, I guess, for him look like? I mean, even if—
Double digits, probably.
Yeah. I mean, we're not going to game everything out right now because it's all up and down, but— I guess when you're still in that middle pack, like we're seeing what's going on in New Hampshire, like if those kind of numbers for Joe Biden exist, you know, mm-hmm. when you're a point or two away from other people, I mean, that's not resounding. That's you're in the pack. And yes, you could probably keep limping forward. You can say mm-hmm. you won South Carolina, but that's not a big blowout you need.
Right. It doesn't give you a whole bunch of confidence. And last night, you know, it's the projection of that confidence. Really, that is what we were hearing from Joe Biden talking about. Yeah, these other states, they're going to do whatever they're going to do. But it's here in South Carolina. It's in places like Nevada. It's places where, and he used the phrase several times, where black and brown people vote mm-hmm. and appealing to those constituencies, which he believes he does very, very genuinely and has done for some time. So it's all an expectations management game, which I know we've talked about a lot before, mm-hmm. but certainly in a field this large, the wins don't have to be that huge to still be wins. But for Joe Biden here, it does need to be significant.
Yeah, I do not expect that they are going to even try to lower expectations mm-hmm. here. There's mm-hmm. no point. I mean, if you don't win South Carolina big, you're going to be in trouble.
Right.
And we have 17 days. You know, we can catch our breath. I know we're like in the heat of it right now because we have results and everyone's, you know, trying to figure things out.
Real numbers. But,
and so, like we say, there's still plenty of time to wait. But Jamie and Meg both, I want to get this. You know, when are we going to see Jim Clyburn endorse? And what does that mean for this race? I mean, does that endorsement carry the weight that it needs to carry to help get Joe across the finish line? If that's the case, if that's who he plans on endorsing, which everyone kind of speculates he is, does he even bother? I mean, what are the thoughts right now on what Jim Clyburn and his role in this situation?
I mean, he's been clear for some time. It was sort of reported as news last week, but it was not. He's been saying this mm-hmm. for a while. He said, if I endorse, which I might, it'll be after the debate. He does not want to step on the party's parade. Mm-hmm. You know, he's obviously a great ally of the South Carolina Democratic Party. They had this great moment in the spotlight. If he endorses before the debate, you know, that's going to take away from some of that and mm-hmm. say, oh, this race is already over in South Carolina. So he's going to wait for the debate. I would not be surprised if Wednesday morning, you know, after that Tuesday night debate, mm-hmm. there may be a press conference and he may make an announcement. Obviously, the speculation has long been for way back since last summer that if he was going to endorse anyone, it would be Joe Biden. You know, he's, of course, a senior member of the Congressional Black Caucus, which has been overwhelmingly supportive of Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. And he has known Joe Biden for many, many years, which he has not for most of these other candidates in the race. So he would certainly be the obvious frontrunner for that. You know, with that said, his grandson, mm-hmm. Walter Clyburn Reed, is working on Pete Buttigieg's campaign. And in fact, the Buttigieg campaign is very prominently using images of Clyburn in ads to note that. And, you know, I'm sure there are all kinds of other folks who are competing for it. You know, what I would also point out is that in 2008, I talk to people all the time who do not realize this. In South Carolina, they think, you know, oh, in 2008, Jim Clyburn endorsed Barack Obama. Jim Clyburn didn't mm-hmm. endorse Obama until months after the South Carolina mm-hmm. primary. Yeah. He did not endorse for South Carolina primary.
That
and
was
what that was
do, yeah.
what that was read as
yep.
was, you know, mm-hmm. I'm endorsing Obama because he wasn't endorsing Clinton.
Yeah.
You know, Clinton was seen as the establishment favorite, and the fact that Jim Clyburn wouldn't come out there and endorse her was read as a sort of tacit endorsement of Obama. You know, he writes in his book that the next morning he got a very angry phone call from
right.
from Bill Clinton,
yeah.
who was, you know, saying, you cost us this election.
I'll give you a fight. So,
you know, one thing to keep in mind is the national media narrative going to be that if Jim Clyburn doesn't endorse, does that mean he thinks that Joe Biden's in trouble? In some ways, setting the expectations that he's going to endorse mm-hmm. you creates a difficult situation.
And Meg, I want your thoughts too. But you know, when we look at, you know, what's the damage if he does do a bad endorsement? Because granted, like, you know, Clyburn said that he's going to run again, but I mean. Mm-hmm. His future after that, you know, is that going to necessarily affect his, like, ability to pick a winner or a loser? I mean, does it hurt him if he endorses someone that's not going to succeed at this point? Or
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that regardless of whatever decision Jim Clyburn makes about his endorsement, non-endorsement, whatever, isn't really going to negatively affect Jim Clyburn too much.
Yeah.
He has been doing this for a very long time.
So it doesn't matter, then.
He is the top Democrat here in South Carolina. Yes. And I think that whatever he decides to do and why, I feel that he will come out of it just fine. As Jamie noted, though, his backing could mean a heck of a lot for somebody, perhaps if they need it in the most dire way there at the last minute. I'm just going to leave it there at that. But it is certainly an endorsement that all of these candidates have been going after and been going after hard, but also in a deferential way. I mean, you know, right. Jim Clyburn has the fish fry and everybody comes and they all stand up. But he does way more than that. You know, he's behind every major Democratic event that happens here in South Carolina. And, you know, even if he were to not endorse somebody who ends up becoming the nominee and then potentially the president, I would predict that they would have just a fine relationship where he'd maintain his leadership or otherwise.
Well, especially when you say, like, you know, people don't even remember who he endorsed or didn't endorse in 2008.
Right. Things move really fast.
Yeah. No, it's just a big bump at the end. And and I would just also like to add, by
the
way,
to be like that late in the game.
That's the question. That's the question. I think, you know, It's not going to make a humongous impact, but if you need a couple points here and there, it can certainly push you over the edge, and it gives you a great headline going into primary day. I'd also add, this is the first time in a while that there has been another prize on the possible table, which is Joe Cunningham. It's gotten a lot less conversation because of the fact that Joe Cunningham is not really a national political analyst the way Clyburn is. Clyburn will just talk to us about the race and he'll, you know, give his takes on it. Joe Cunningham wants really no part of that because he's so focused on local issues. He's focused on his own race. Mm-hmm. But with that being said, you know, I've talked to some folks in Joe Cunningham's orbit who say he's probably not going to endorse, but he thinks that Bernie Sanders being at the top of the ticket would be very damaging for candidates like him, candidates who are centrist, candidates who are in districts that used to be Republican and are very vulnerable going into 2020. And if he thinks that it could make an impact and derail Bernie's candidacy to come out and support somebody else— he may consider it, particularly if we get into the final week and it looks like Bernie actually might win South Carolina. So it's unlikely, but do not rule it out. And that's something that, you know, some people I don't think have been thinking about as much because we are so focused on Clyburn. Clyburn is still the kingmaker. Mm-hmm. Clyburn is the guy who everyone knows. But Joe Cunningham suddenly has a lot of currency in the Lowcountry. And if he comes out and supports somebody, that would be quite a story.
Yeah, and then you get a real, real big push out last week. And again, like we said, 17 days, we got two debates, we got a caucus in there. I mean, this is still, a lot is still happening. You know, we can't.
So much.
Everyone's writing all these obits already, and we're like, hey, can we just, you know, get a couple more than just these two early primaries?
It is crazy. You have the contest start to happen, and then everyone gets focused on whatever happened in whatever state, and oh, this is over, and this and that, and the other thing. And I mean, that was a big part of Joe Biden's messaging last night. You know, he said it, the predictions and the word of the death of our campaign was premature. You know, let's just all calm down, take a beat. And that's the same kind of measured expectations that we would expect from him, but it's also a strong message that he does need to do well here.
Yeah, and the advertising just blowing out the airwaves right now. Mm-hmm. That are, it's not just Tom Steyer's market, it's everyone jumping into him.
Everybody all at once, all the time.
Right. Plenty to cover, plenty to go around, and The Lead has you covered, as does the Post and Courier and the Associated Press. And don't forget my Ion Schechter's team over at the State Newspaper. But you can find my guests on Twitter at MegKennardAP and at JS Lovegrove. Thank you guys so much, and we'll be in touch.
Always a pleasure.
17 days to go.
Yeah.
We all need more coffee.
It's that time again for some campaign trail news updates. We're looking at the latest in 2020 related movements affecting South Carolina, state campaign news, and highlights from the state's congressional delegation.
17 days till primary day.
Ooh. Yeah, where did that voice come from? 17 more days. A notable endorsement for Joe Biden came from former South Carolina Governor Jim Hodges last week. The Post and Courier reports that this further consolidates the former vice president's extensive establishment support and means he now has the backing of the only two living former Democrat governors in South Carolina, Hodges and Dick Riley. The Post and Courier broke the story that a group of prominent upstate Republicans is preparing to launch a wide-scale effort to encourage GOP voters across South Carolina to vote for U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders in the February 29th Democratic primary. Now, this effort has two goals, the Post and Courier reports. One is to boost the candidate who the Republicans believe presents the weakest general election threat to President Donald Trump, and to pressure Democrats to support closing the state's primaries in the future. Currently, voters do not have to register by party and can participate in either party's contest. Senator Lindsey Graham tweeted photos of himself in New Hampshire on Tuesday campaigning for President Donald Trump. The AP reports that Congressman Jim Clyburn said that the Democratic Party's future under Party Chairman Tom Perez is under scrutiny amid fallout from the Iowa caucuses and the winnowing of the presidential primary field to the exclusion of candidates of color. While on C-SPAN's Newsmakers, Clyburn, the third-ranking House Democrat, stopped short of saying Perez must go as leader of the DNC. In our final section, Did You Know?, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure that lawmakers use when speaking to each other. And did you know that South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney is here with some state trivia?
Hey.
Russ, welcome.
Glad to be back.
We're on a Wednesday. It's a little weird, or it's a Tuesday. It's even weirder.
Yeah.
We don't know what day it is. What you got for us?
In the month of February, which is probably the most infamous month in the history of the state of South Carolina.
Oh.
For in February in 1865, General William Sherman made his march through the state, burning the state's capital city, et cetera, on the way into North Carolina and Virginia toward the end of the war.
All that booze.
Yeah. And while there's certainly a lot of history concerning the state and the Civil War, the first shot was fired here. We, of course, were the first state to secede from the Union. Our capital city was literally burned to the ground.
Mm.
Did you know that there was only one real major battle where Confederate forces attempted to save South Carolina, attempted to take Sherman on, slow down his march through South Carolina?
Okay.
Now, early in the war, there were lots of bombardments and skirmishes around Charleston with the Union forces trying to occupy Charleston and things like that, the Battle of Secessionville. But there was only really one where they pulled out the drums and had the horses and the cannons and had a real live battle.
Okay.
Ah,
I might.
Ringing a bell.
I do. I might. I mean,
okay. So what was the name of that battle? A, the Battle of Aiken. B, the Battle at River's Bridge. C, the Battle at Watery Crossing. D, the Battle of Camden.
And I have this, I was thinking back to Florence, and maybe it was something else. Was it? I mean, there's the columns in Florence. There was that big skirmish out there, and I don't know if I'm getting my history's confused there. But I feel like I've covered a reenactment out there.
Well, there were lots of skirmishes.
Okay,
but this is a real battle.
With,
400 Union forces were killed, 200 Confederate troops died in this battle.
Mm.
The only significant battle in the state.
Let's do it again, Russ.
Okay, A, Battle of Aiken. B, Battle of River's Bridge. C, Battle of, or at, Watery Crossing. B, the Battle of Camden.
I don't know. I want to go with D again. We talk about Camden and the historic nature of it. And, you know, it's in the middle of the state. Well, but then it's, you know, like if we're talking about, you know, Sherman's March, okay, I don't know exactly. I mean, I'm guessing he went south from here, so.
Battle of Camden was a well-known battle in the Revolutionary War.
Okay.
The answer is B, the Battle of Rivers Bridge.
Rivers Bridge, okay.
Near Earhart in Bamberg County.
Okay.
It is a state historic site, worth a trip. There's also a state park there.
Mm.
If you do go this time of year, the last time I was there, the bathrooms weren't heated. So so bear that in mind. But the Battle of Rivers Bridge, the only legitimate field battle in the state during the Civil War, and that... Of course, the Confederate forces there failed to slow Sherman's march down, and that opened the path for his forces to move on to take Columbia.
And, that's interesting there, Russ. Yeah, I was. If you look on our Instagram account, I was down in Charleston over the weekend. Went to the cigar factory, Mercantile Mash over there, and I walked past the marker for the "We Shall Overcome."
I've not seen that.
The chant that we were talking about when became where it was popularized there at the cigar factory. So, I was walking from East Bay to King Street, and I was like, Russ McKinney would appreciate this. Thanks, Russ.
Sure.
The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on SCETV.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV. Fridays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 11:30 a.m. All about this podcast and more is available on SCTV's Super Easy to Use app and southcarolinapublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts. Search us easily on your Android, the NPR One app, or wherever you find podcasts. They're like everywhere. Also, be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. It's been a while. Daddy needs a fix. Follow us on Instagram at SCLeadPod, and you can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course, our dank memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle at SCLEDEPOD. We have swag, sticker swag, that is. Send us a direct message on Twitter or Instagram with your address, and we'll send one your way. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to scled@scetv.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Associated Press and the Post and Courier. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Birch and Tom Posey are our executive producers. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on February 12th, 2020.
2020.
I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening. Secret message. Kisses just Jimmy Buffett and me.